Srila Prabhupada explains, the whole process of creation is an act of gradual evolution and development from one element to another, reaching up to the variegatedness of the earth as so many trees, plants, mountains, rivers, reptiles, birds, animals, and varieties of human beings. The quality of sense perception is also evolutionary, namely generated from sound, then touch, and from touch to form. Taste and odor are also generated along with the gradual development of sky, air, fire, water, and earth. They are all mutually the cause and effect of one another. But the original cause is the Lord Himself in plenary portion, as Mahavishnu lying in the causal water of the Mahatattva. So each one will have a connection with the other, right? It'll be the cause why the other's there. But ultimately, it's the Lord who's independent. In other words, these elements aren't independent from each other. They are the cause of the creation of each other. But the Lord is the independent one who's the cause of all this. Right? So that's always the thing to understand. And here's the technical things on how they all relate together. It just helps in appreciating how the creation works because we're involved with it. So that means this is how we're involved. Right, so that's the benefit of it. But then the other aspect is that more important is how the Lord is involved. Right? That's the one to remember. If you remember the other details, it's good. But if you forget, but if you don't remember them, it still works. But if you remember Krishna is the one connected with them and he's making it work, then you get the benefit. Does that make sense? But if you can understand both of them, then it becomes you see how things work. Okay. The qualities of sense perception are fully represented in the earth, and they are manifested in other elements to a lesser extent. So, qualities of sense perception, you have all five in the earth, right? So that's why people get the most into that. It's not so much that you can, it's not the seeing, because we think we're seeing it. No, it's because it's the earth. That's the thing. So all the aspects are there. You can see a tree, you can smell a tree, you can taste a tree. I wouldn't recommend going up and biting it or something. But you know, saying so all those elements are there, right? You can hear it, you know, the wind and the leaves. So you get all five. Anything that is, that you can basically physically see, other than water and fire, then is going to be a fuller manifestation. That's why people are always absorbed in the grosser elements, because if you're committed to sense gratification, where are you going to get the most sense gratification?
Earth.
From earth. Right? So that's why it's all about owning earth.
Yes.
You understand? You know, earth as land, earth is the house on the land, earth is the two cars in the garage on that land.
Yes.
You know, like that. You understand? Clothes is earth.
Yes.
Right? You know, you wouldn't want to get too much into like air clothes or something. It's popular in some places, but I wouldn't recommend it. Like that. Trees wear air clothes, so that's the result. In the sky there is sound only, Whereas in the air there are sound and touch. In the fire there are sound, touch, and shape. And in the water there is taste also, along with other perceptions, namely sound, touch, and shape. In the earth, however, there are all the above-mentioned qualities with an extra development of odor also. Therefore, on the earth, there is a full display of variegatedness of life, which is originally started with the basic principle of air. Vaikarika is the neutral stage of creation. Okay, here we have a new term being fed. Vaikarika is the neutral stage of creation, and Tejas is the initiative of creation. Vaitamas is the full display of material creation under the spell of the darkness of ignorance.
Meaning the creation is in the mode of ignorance.
No, tamas is the full display of material creation under the spell of darkness of ignorance. In other words, the whole thing's under the spell of the darkness of ignorance, but the full manifestation is done through tamas. Because then you get the full benefit.
Okay. What's the difference between tamas and ignorance?
They're the same. But this just means that this aspect is called that. I think these three connect to before is the, what were those three?
Dravya,
Kriya, and Jnana. They also, I think, these are the names of the different false egos.
Mm-hmm.
Vaikarya, Tejas, and what was the other one? Tamas. Right? And then you have the Purusha Bhav, that is the fourth. That's the actual ignorance, right? Because you see, as Shiva being the Lord of ignorance, what is he the Lord of? He's the Lord of false ego, right? Because that's the thing, is that Krishna doesn't deal with false ego, but as Shiva he does, right? That transformation, that's what it's dealing with, that false identity. So that's what Linga is that aspect to deal with the false ego, which means trying to control and enjoy material nature, because you can't control and enjoy the spiritual nature. It's not going to allow you. It's conscious. You know? Does that have any sense? You know, you walk up to an inanimate object, you know, and hey, you know, nothing happens. You walk up to a girl and do that, you get slapped. Right? You know, so that's the whole point, is that the internal potency won't allow it to happen. They just immediately turn into external. Like Sita Devi, as soon as Ravana tries to touch her, she's the external energy. He's picking up Maya. He never actually touches Sita. Right? And he thinks, as Maya, she's so good. So he doesn't actually know what she looks like as Sita. But he may see her when she's interacting with the Lord, but due to illusion, he doesn't understand that that's not who he has. But this principle is there also with there were some others, the same kind of thing. I'm not even sure that it's not. I think it was Ravana. Yeah, there was this girl. She's very beautiful. And he went up to touch her, and then she just turned into ash. So then he said, you're not getting away so easy. So he took all the ash, put it in a box. And he kept the box, you know. And then I think his mother-in-law, either his mother or mother, no, it would have been his mother. She saw the box and she said, this is not good. She said, get rid of this box. You know, I'm not even sure she didn't look in it and see somebody there. She just knew this box is trouble. So then I think he wouldn't get rid of the box, so she had it arranged at one of the, you know, wallas there, you know, fly, took it and dropped it in India. And so Janaka, then he was out, they were going to do a yajna, and so they started plowing the field, and they hit the box, and they opened the box, it was, Sita was inside, like that, so, yeah.
She was Vedavati?
Vedavati? Vedavati, yeah, the girl was Vedavati. Like that. So, long story. So, again, back to Earth. So, you're not going to be able to enjoy that, so you'll end up with the external energy. So that element, therefore, of dealing on that level, that is linga. That's Shiva. Right? So then you have the original form. Then you have the, how you say, the demigod who deals with that. You know, so it's all one kind of... Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like you have, you have like these light switches that work on a slide. You know, so this is fully off, that's fully on. So it just means, so this is on, that's off, right? So two opposing things. But you just slide it in between, and it's the same thing. You understand? So one end is Krishna, then there's the transformation of Sadashiva, and then there's the demigod. Mm-hmm. You understand? So it's one thing. Does that make sense? Yes? No?
It's called dimmer.
Dimmer, yes. And that's the point. It gets dimmer as it goes. The darkness of ignorance, you know, this side is, yes.
When we talk about them as different personalities, we get this tendency, we want to put them in three different boxes. So
yes, but it's also it's different aspects of the same personality.
So then my mind goes, well, is it the same or isn't it? You know?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the point. It's both. They're the same, but they're different. That's the advantage of a Chintamaya Meditatva.
That's your good.
See, because if you understand that, you can understand anything. That's the advantage of it. Other philosophies are good, the Vaishnava philosophies, but a Chintamaya Meditatva opens the fineness of these, you know, to a great degree.
So which mode is the creation?
Means you have the overall of ignorance, because the reason for it is because people are ignorant of their position as servant of the Lord. But it's being carried out, of course, by passion. Does that make sense? It's just like someone's cooking for Krishna and someone's not cooking for Krishna. So one is in pure goodness, one is in passion or ignorance. Right? Or you could have someone who's cooking because it's their duty. So it's in goodness. Someone's cooking for themselves. Someone's cooking who knows what. You know, you don't want to know what. And so the mechanics of the cooking is the same, but you have four different positions of what modes they can be in. Then you have the combinations. Right? So then it ends up with so many varieties. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's what you're dealing with. You're dealing with these double things at once. We study them one at a time so we get a clear understanding, but it's just like, let's say, the levels of consciousness. Now, the levels of consciousness also connect with levels of work. Right? You know, just like Manamoy is Varnashram, following Dharma and all that. But you could be following Dharma just because of the sense gratification you'll get. So you could follow it from Anamoy. Or you could be following it because it pleases Krishna, so then you're functioning on Anamoy. So that's the thing, is you have the mechanics of each one, you have the, and then you have the consciousness. So it's generally a natural match. Yeah, does that make sense? Yeah. But you can mix them. That's how you end up with... Aardvarks have very long nose and very bushy tails. You know, so there's some unique mix there. You know. So...
Maharaj,
yes.
This example you gave for Manasham. So the difficulty is that we don't usually relate to the change of consciousness, it's rather change of form.
Yeah, that's the point. So for us, Varnashram is economics, but it's not, it's Dharma. From Dharma comes economics. So if you follow Dharma, economics will come. But we think, no, economics can be gained on the own. But it's just like, how do I get a profit from the earth? If I'm going to farm, What do I do? Is it speculative or it's directly science? Yeah, you have to... The earth has to be the right kind of earth in the right kind of condition at the right kind of time of year. Then I have to put the right seed. And then, you know, the proper watering, weeding, all these different things. Then, and the proper amount of nutrition, then I get the results. So there's no speculation here. But the point is you're acting according to the exact nature of the earth. The prophet, you don't have to worry about the prophet. That will come automatically. So that's the thing. You perform your dharma, you'll get it anyway. So the businessman simply has to perform his duty of what is business. So it's focused on the dharma aspect of it, not on the artha aspect of it. So the artha will come. But they think, no, I have to focus on the artha, otherwise I won't get it. But then the problem is then dharma may not be practiced. And then if you don't get dharma, you're not really going to get artha.
It's interesting what you mentioned, because many farms have failed because they started thinking, I'm going to plant this just to sell. And then the market changes and the whole production goes down. So we don't focus on the actual process.
Yeah.
We don't get the right product which you're thinking of in the beginning, like Hungary with pumpkins. They just failed very badly. They had a contract, everything was perfect.
How many pumpkins can anyone eat?
Yeah, it's
always pumpkins. I'm not sure why. It's always pumpkins. Every farm I hear, pumpkins.
It's big, and people think you can make a lot of money out of it.
Yeah, I guess so.
Is it because of the Halloween?
Could be.
Halloween is not from Europe.
But did they do it in Europe also?
Oh.
When the Halloween season comes, they serve big time pumpkins.
Oh. Yes.
A friend of mine whose occupation is an organic farmer in North Carolina, he gets subscriptions from people at the beginning of the growing season, and then he fulfills that prescription week by week. And he does quite well. And he once told me that you can hardly think of more of a return than what you get by planting seeds. There's a return there that measures up and surpasses any sort of profit system you can think of.
Yeah. I mean, you take half a kilo of seeds and you end up with tons of, vegetables or something. That's good.
If Manamoy is mode of goodness, then what is Vijnanamoy?
Manamoy will be goodness and passion.
Okay.
Vijnanamoy will be goodness.
Okay.
Right? That means pranamoy will be passion, and ignorance.
Okay.
Anamoy will be. It means it matches the modes. You see, Anamoy is about the senses, an expression through the senses.
Yeah.
Right. So that occupation. Then the next is passion, ignorance, with profit, economics. I mean, your economics, justice, morality, because if you don't have morality, people steal your money, and if they do steal your money, you want justice. So the three are, you can't separate them. Then performing your dharma, that's the kshatriya element, and then the level, the platform, the soul, because that's actual real knowledge.
Yes.
That's the brahminical.
Yes.
So that's right, brahminical culture means functioning the platform, the soul, performing your prescribed duty.
Okay.
Right, so prana means the anamoy and pranamoy you don't worry about. They're secondary, results of the other two. Right, but by performing it in that way, you get the secondary results and you get liberated. Right, so you're not going to get more profit than that. Right, so then, but then if you do that in devotion, then that's the real.
That's the money maker.
Yeah. So you could say more profit than the seeds in the land is going to be the effort you put into bhakti and the results you get back from bhakti. That would be the ultimate profit. Right? Because you're putting in something of limited nature and getting back unlimited. Right? So that's the ultimate profit.
Yeah. The gift that keeps on giving.
Yes.
All right, so in this logic, Anandamoy, it's pure goodness.
Pure goodness. Does that make sense? Because in other words, every formula can be applied in every situation, but just when the situation changes, the vocabulary you use in connection with it, that may change. Right? So it means the same thing before that we were calling goodness, passion, ignorance from another perspective, then we're calling Dravya, Karya, and Jnana. And then for this one, we're calling Vaikara, Vaikarika, Tejas, and Tamas.
Yes.
So, does that make sense?
But are they not all ignorant, those three?
Means it's like this is daytime. But what do you call, you know, over there? Means over there you see there's light on the bushes, right? But behind that you see this kind of a dark patch. Yeah, but it's still daytime. Yeah, so in the overall of ignorance, you have goodness, passion, ignorance. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the thing. Mahatattva means there's an overall, like you could say, pallor. Does that make sense? Pallor. Let's say someone's sick. There's kind of a pallor that they just don't look quite right, a little grayish. And, you know, they may, you know, they still interact in that, but there's that pallor. So like that. Or let's say you know, the last, whatever it is, couple of weeks at high school, you know, there's exams. You know, there's a flavor that over the whole school. You understand? Though everything goes on, you understand? So, in other words, ignorance is the flavor of the Mahatattva. Then within that, then goodness, passion, ignorance then get everything done. So that ignorance is what you can see, the passion is the creation of that, the jnana is the knowledge by which you deal with it or you identify with it. Right? So in here then, your okay, so Tamas would be your dravya, because it's the full display. Tejas is the initiative, so that would be your kriya, right, or mode of passion. And then Vaikarika is the neutral, so that would be your jnana. But that's your false ego, your identities. Does that make sense? So that's the false ego that goes with false ego, right? Tejas will be the false ego that goes with intelligence and the senses. Tamas will be the false ego. Tejas is what goes with the false ego. The Vaikarika is what goes with the mind.
Okay. Right. My Vaikarika go with the mind. So that means the mode of goodness.
Yeah. So that's the thing, is that each one of these, depending on how you place it, has its different position. Because intelligence is generated from passion, because it deals with the senses and its activity. The mind is the peaceful one. Right? And the identity, the false identity, is based on what dravya you have. Like my false ego is based on what body I have. Where is that body from? You know, what else is connected with the body? You know what I'm saying? Means if, you know what I'm saying, if your first car was a limousine, you know, it has a particular, you know, the false ego has a particular flavor.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Yes. No, it's generated from passion, you know, which is that particular manifestation of the overall element of ego, false ego. Does that make sense? Because no mode is pure. It always includes the others. That's why I said is that it's each one is the cause of the other. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Manufacture of the quote-unquote necessities of life in factories and workshops, excessively prominent in the age of Kali or in the age of the machine, is the summit stage of the quality of darkness. Okay. Because it's just producing dravya. It's not a matter of something for that there's actually a benefit or there's something to do with the soul. It's just being produced because it will give you better facility for the other aspects of dravya. You know what I'm saying? you have a couch, that's dravya, and what are you going to put on the couch? The dravya you call your body. Right? You understand? So therefore, that's why it's this the epitome of ignorance, because we would take it as passion. But yes, passion's the initiative to create it, but the whole purpose of it is just to increase the mode of ignorance.
Yes.
Right? So does that make sense? So the modern economics is based on increasing the mode of ignorance. Yes. You know, enough passion that you're willing to go out and buy it. But even nowadays, you don't even have enough passion. Have to have enough passion to get in a vehicle and go downtown to the shop. You simply have to go online.
Yes. The shop comes to you.
Yeah, so then, you know. Yeah.
So then Sambandha and Prayojana are both in ignorance, and then Abhideya is little passion.
Yeah. Like that. The whole thing is all in ignorance. But
yeah.
Then there's a touch of, you can say, goodness, because there's some knowledge how it works. Right? In other words, the guy who's running the company, he's got more of that knowledge. So therefore that's why he's making the bigger profit. And we have a small amount, enough to, you know, find the web page and push the right button and, you know, put in our numbers off our credit card. Right? But then we lose in the transaction. Right? You know, he gains. So he has more knowledge. You know, so it's knowledge within it's knowledge of ignorance.
Right.
It's activity within ignorance. And then it's ignorance within ignorance. You know, so that's why, unless you get rid of I'm the controller and enjoyer, then you have to function within this sphere of ignorance, because controller and enjoyer means ignorance. We take it that it's just, you know, a, you know, how you say, a bona fide option.
Yeah.
But it's ignorance. Then there's pure goodness. So you can function in the realm of pure goodness or ignorance.
Yes.
These are the options. So then pure goodness, then they'll have the samvit sandini and haladini, which will be the situation. You know, in other words, the dravya is the sandini, the samvit is the activities, and then the goodness, the experience you get from it will be there. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Because you know, that you know through that experience.
Mm.
Mixed,
means?
There's only two options, ignorance or pure goodness.
Mm. Yes.
Why
do you mix? What's
mixed? Everything, what we do, kind of a mixed nature.
Who's we? You mean devotees?
Yes.
Okay, that just means then you're dealing with both. So that's why it's a bit of a roller coaster ride. So some aspects of pure goodness and then back to ignorance. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, that's why it's recommended that you establish your lifestyle in the mode of goodness with the purpose, so then that regulates that a bit. And then you do that to please Krishna, so then you bump it up to pure goodness. So that's why it's not recommended you go from pure goodness down to basically passion and ignorance. That's too weird, you know. So that's why it's not recommended that you use any other lifestyle than the Vedic. If one is saying, no, what's the difference? It means we're not understanding the practical philosophy here. The point is, the Western lifestyle is passion and ignorance. And the passion, basically, we're talking about the guys that run the place. You know? So that means everybody else is in ignorance.
Even the materialists, they joke about people that spend too much time on the couch, you know,
yes,
watching TV.
Yes.
They become couch potatoes.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. No, it's there. It's there. But that's the problem with them is they don't spend enough. They don't work enough to have enough to spend. So basically they're kind of a waste of time. You know, plus they make the springs in the couch go flat. All around is lose-lose. Right? Yes.
Marisa, isn't it what happens, you know, like after festival, I've seen so many friends and they're afraid to go back, actually, to whatever places they're from, because this is like a fault. like festival, everybody's devotee, everybody's happy, you know, kirtan, this, mm-hmm. that. And then there's, I don't know, Moscow with traffic, or in Siberia with...
less traffic.
Yeah, less traffic, but...
but not much better.
Yeah. But, you know,
polar bear.
If you mine, you know, like, coal, I don't know, people, you know, getting oil out of course, it's not like really...
No, it's pretty... The Dravya aspect is pretty prominent there. Or
indirectly connected at best.
Yeah.
Alright. So when Prabhupada is proposing us to break the cycle of industry and go back to a more agrarian-based economy, is he aiming to somehow...
It's goodness. The point is a lifestyle of goodness. So agrarian-based means it has all the aspects that are supported by that. Because the whole world worked on that. It's like... The families that are rich now and have been rich for hundreds of years, they got that money from an agrarian-based economy. So it's not that you can't do it. You know, it's that you're smart. That's how you make the money. It's not that it has to be. This other thing is, So then, let's say, going back. The aspect is that's what these technical points are for, is so that you can see is then the mechanics, how it's working. So even what's working there, you see it according to the philosophy. So you're looking at how the materialists are engaged in passion and ignorance, but you see it connected to the philosophy. Where do they get that power from? They think it's their own power. They think it's because they took their some X amount of spoons of their whey powder and, mm-hmm. you know, their spirulina, and that's why they're, you know, out there and doing things like that. They jumped, they went to the gym, they did this, they did that, you know. But the point is, it's the Kriya Shakti. So it's Krishna's energy. So anything that they're good at, it's working. Any knowledge they come up with, that's a Jnana Shakti. You know, but their whole purpose of doing that is to, you know, that something's manufactured that you can see. So it ultimately ends up that this tamas, you know, because all the dravya is just the grossest manifestation of ignorance. Okay, look at it this way. So you have subtle manifestation of ignorance, less subtle and gross. Does that make sense? Okay.
Is this why Srila Prabhupada mentioned that the materials, they have no good qualities, because it's all connected to dravya?
It's just connected to ignorance. So it's just like let's say a koala bear. They sleep 22 hours a day. Real ignorant. You know, cute, but real ignorant. You know? You know? Like that. Real ignorant. So... that's the whole point, is that the mode of ignorance, they can be cute, but it doesn't mean any real dynamic, you know. You definitely wouldn't want to hire koalas for your middle management. Might be a bit slow. 2 hours a day, but, you know, most of that's taken up eating leaves. So it's like that. So that's why these things are there, since you have to deal with material energy. Why not see it through the view of how the acharyas see the material energy? That's the advantage of this. But ultimately the point is why are they doing? They're doing this and that to get the facilities to serve Krishna. Right? So because they are doing that, then they're able to come here and visit and spend time. You know, so that's the real benefit. But otherwise, one can take advantage by just looking at the mechanics of how things are working. And that way then they don't really see... They don't see materialistic energy. They see material, the external energy. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the... You know, but that's why Prabhupada... That's why it's... One of the purposes of ISKCON is to create a spiritual place that is different from over there. Otherwise, if you want to over there, just come here and do what you do over there, then what's the use? Why come here? Just, okay, it's cheaper, yeah. You know, but other than that, then... Yeah.
But that's changing.
Yeah, I was thinking, and if people bring this mentality, then this place becomes expensive.
Yeah, of course, of course. Because it's that mentality that makes what it is. Mm. Yeah, when we came here, that land there, the guy wanted, I think, 80,000 a biga.
The biga is 20 kata.
Yes. Yeah. You see, he didn't even know so much the bigas. Because before, to me, it's bigas, katas. It's like, who buys in katas? You know, you buy in bigas. And so, land didn't want to buy it because that's too expensive, because it should have been 60. Uh-huh. You know. Now it's, you know, however many. Now he's selling it by kata. Right? Okay. As such, increasing the artificial needs, as is the standard of material creation, or advancing the economic development of human society, is a sort of engagement in darkness without knowledge. So, in other words, increasement of facility is only worthwhile if that facility is used for Krishna. Otherwise, then one lives a simple lifestyle. That was before. It's the Brahmins who are in the best knowledge. It's not that they couldn't live a better lifestyle. It's just that why? Why bother? Why get involved? Because it already works, right? You have your grass hut, you know, you have your books, you study, you teach. Does that make sense? You could do more. So the only purpose of increasing facility is if it increases Krishna consciousness. You know, like Prabhupada. Ideas. You have a big temple, then people go, okay, what's that? Let's go see. And so for them, it's tourism. But then they come and see the deity, take Charinamrita, take prasad, you know, spend time in the dham, hear the kirtan. Like, does that make sense? So that's the whole point of increasing dravya. Otherwise, people are increasing dravya because it's going to simply increase their bodily facilities. So it's all ignorance. So that's the whole point. That's what we say. What's the point? We say, oh, this is regressive, or this is not, you know, we have to... No, but anybody can understand. You know, it's... So nobody minds. It should be clear that no one minds if monks or religious people live simply. No one really cares. We present it as if they'll be freaking out. No one cares. You know, there isn't anybody who has a problem with that. They expect, I forget who I was talking to the other day. Oh yeah, it was a professor at one of the universities. I think he deals in philosophy or religious studies. And he was saying that actually people expect monks to wear weird clothes. Yeah. You know? They don't expect them to wear up to date. They expect they're going to be wearing some old archaic thing. You know, and so because if you do that, then that's comforting to know, okay, things are, you know, yeah, still there. There's something, security, there's stability. You know, so it's not a problem. So he was saying this thing that we get into that no, that they can't relate to it. No, people can relate to monks as you know, they're different. People don't mind, you know. They have different lifestyle, they this and that. That people are quite comfortable with that. You know? That's the thing. We get this idea they won't be. No, they're quite comfortable like that.
Actually quite attracted to it.
Yeah, quite attracted. Now they themselves may not do that. But that's fine.
They know the difference.
Yeah, can tell the difference, yes.
I think part of it is they understand that getting away from the maddening crowd, all the confusion, the chaos of city life and the things that they have to experience on a daily basis actually makes sense on some level.
Yes. No, they can appreciate it. They maybe can't do it, but they respect it. So in other words, if someone can live without the rat race and be satisfied, and they're not an idiot or something, you know. You know, it's not, they're not like Quasimodo or something. You know? So then the, you know, they relate, you know. And even Quasimodo, they don't mind because, you know, he rings bells at the church, so it's cool.
All right. Yeah. Recently, I offered a small seminar for a company. And I asked them, "You prefer me in a suit or in a dhoti?" He's a friend of mine. He said, well, soup might be impressive, but then the dhoti will relate to tradition. They'll appreciate more. So come in the dhoti.
They don't mind if that's what you are. No one minds. It's like if you're coming and giving a lecture on Vedic something, they don't mind that you look Vedic. You know, it's just like this. Now, the Dalai Lama, okay, now he's going to come and give a lecture on Tibetan Buddhism. Should he wear a suit? You know, you lose some of the experience. That's the whole point. So it's missed. It's missed. Okay. Or advancing the economic development of human society is a sort of engagement in darkness without knowledge. Because we've already mentioned that jnana shakti within the material world is this knowledge of how material energy works, that you can, in other words, how to apply kriya to get dravya. Right? How to apply the activity to get a physical result. So that is technically darkness. It's not real knowledge. So real knowledge is knowledge of your relationship with the Lord. So it's not that we say that, well, we say that intelligent materialistic person has no knowledge. It can be taken in a simplistic way as that they're fools, they're idiots, they don't have any brains. What we're saying is they don't have spiritual knowledge. That's real knowledge. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because otherwise, this knowledge just connected to gravity, then it goes back.
Yeah, it's just like, let's say I have a guy. He's got a wheelbarrow, right? You know wheelbarrow?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah? Wheelbarrow. This little thing like this, it's got a wheel on the front and two handles and pushed up inside.
Yeah.
Okay, we got a wheelbarrow, right? And the guy is full of pennies. I mean, packed with pennies. Okay, now on one sense, you would have to admit he has money. But on another sense, you're going to say he really has money? You know, but you say, no, but there's 10,000 pennies in there.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to say that this guy's really, really rolling in dough here. No, so that's what we're saying is that, yes, they have knowledge, they're intelligence, they have their particular quota of material intelligence functions quite well, you know, for analyzing and this, but it's still not real intelligence because they don't know what's beyond. They don't know the whole picture of the spiritual. We see the difference here? Yeah, so that's the point. So when you're dealing with the... It's just like, okay, you have members of the troupe from the Bolshoi Ballet, okay? Now, you have some little kids and they're learning ballet from someone who doesn't really know ballet. Okay? Pretty standard, right? Okay. Now, will they say that this person knows ballet?
The kids?
Yeah.
They will be pretty impressed, probably.
Who?
The kids.
The kids will be, but I'm saying, well, the people from the Bolshoi Ballet.
No.
So, they will say they don't really know anything. Okay?
So with the ballet.
Does that make sense? So that's what we say. When we say less intelligent or without knowledge, poor fund of knowledge, that's because you're comparing it to the total, complete, absolute knowledge. Therefore, everything else doesn't matter. Does that make sense? You know, or let's say, you know, one guy has, one diamond, and he's thinking he's doing very good, but another guy owns one of those beaches on the southern part of Africa. You know, the guy's there with barbed wire and razor wire and machine guns, because the whole beach is just raw diamonds. You understand? That's the whole... It's not that he doesn't have a diamond, but the point is that's not really having anything. Yes?
A college student in New York heard a devotee say that the guru knew everything, so he waited for Prabhupada to come to New York and came to the class and waited for the questions part, and he raised his hand and he asked Prabhupada, is it true that the guru knows everything? prophet said yes, and then he said, how many windows are there in the Empire State Building? And Prabhupada responded, how many drops are in a mirage?
Yeah.
What does that have to do with knowledge? It's
yeah.
Trivial.
Yes.
That's useless.
Yes. 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 That's the point. Is you have to be able to distinguish. Then by that distinguishing, then you can do so. That's what we're supposed to learn. How to distinguish. Then these kind of problems don't come up, right? You know, because those who think they're smart then won't give you trouble to someone who is smart.
So Maharaj,
yes.
This seems to be like a common thing which happens in our learning of Vedic knowledge is perspective, right? Because here is this knowledge compared to the total knowledge.
Yes.
In the discussion about Shudra, it also seems to be a similar, you know, everybody works so in the material world, so they're the normal person we'll be talking about. So this lack of proportion between things creates a lot of disturbances.
Yeah. That's why we're trying to learn these differences in perspective, because if you can understand the difference between all these different things and how one element's dependent upon the other, but at the same time the Lord is separate, and so he's the origin, then things like, you know, the Shudra, it means it's not that he's any less intelligent than someone else, it's just his intelligence is only applied within Dravya and the expression of emotion through Dravya. Right, through things.
Yes.
And that's what's most important, even if it means breaking all the rules and that you express to yourself, that's the ultimate goal. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty. It just gets into insanity.
Yes.
You know, you see some of these things, I forget what they are, I can't remember what it was, and some of these guys coming out. So it's like one opera, the guy comes out, and then all these... you know, the devil is there, and then all the other demons are coming, or, you know, Swan Lake, you know, it's like you have the good swan and the black swan. I mean, it's all these kind of things, they just get into their heads so much, and, you know, they're up all night, and they sleep all day, and, you know, but they express themselves, and they're great, and they're recognized for that. But the lifestyle they live and their personal personality may not be something you would want anybody else in the society to gain from. So that's why they're in that position. You know, or it's just they're just doing their work and just going through the motions like everybody else and not really looking at the higher principles of life. You know, it's like that. So that's why it's there. But the point is as an individual and all that, they're still just the soul like everybody else. So if they come in contact with Krishna consciousness, then their position being connected to Krishna works fine. Right? You know, just work on the mix. You know, that's less mixed and more pure.
Yes.
So. Okay. By such engagement, human energy is spoiled, because human energy is primarily meant for purifying the senses in order to engage them in satisfying the senses of the Supreme Lord. So that's primarily. So the material development advancement, which will naturally come, is secondary. It can't be primary, because if it's primary, everything gets out of balance, because then people have, but they're not satisfied. Right? So that's the whole thing, is that there has to be a balance. And that balance is purifying the senses, engaging in the Lord's service. That's primary. And secondary is performance of duties and then all the facilities that comes along with it. Right? In other words, you do your duties and you get a lot for it, then you use a lot, you know, in Krishna service. You do the same duties and you get a little bit, you engage a little bit in Krishna service. The point is not how much you're getting, it's how well you do your duties. Right? And therefore, result will automatically come. Does that make sense? Right?
Yes.
Right? So, one guy goes into his garage, tinkers around a bit, and then, you know, being practical, you know, he goes down and has his job down at, you know, flipping burgers or delivering pizza, right? And another guy goes into his garage, they tinker around, and then they have a multinational company after a while.
So the point is the same tinkering, but just one ends up, you know, with great results, one doesn't. Does that make sense? So that's the point why the Vedas, the focus is on prescribed duties, because let's say the man is not making much money, but he's performing his prescribed duties properly. Is he successful?
Yes.
That's the whole point. In the Vedic system, everybody's successful. In the modern system, unless you've collected the projected, you know, daydream of facility, then you're not successful.
And those who have tend to compare themselves with those who have even more.
Yeah. Point is you have the big house, you know, let's say the 4-bedroom, you know, house, or let's, you know, go wild here, 6-bedroom house, and they got 2-3 cars. You know, like that, you know, there's a bit of space around the house. You know, so then you would consider in your neighborhood, they're wealthy. You know, but they're looking at the guys over who have the big villas and the, you know, the huge things and, you know.
Chopper, helicopter.
Yeah, yeah, like that, yeah. Yeah, so of course you'd want to live on the other side of the river because you'd just take the helicopter across. But, yeah.
And then death is going to take it away.
That's there, yeah. Death has, he somehow or another is quite persistent there. Yeah, he's very insistent. Yes.
There was that beautiful story in the Mayan after the decision was made to build the bridge to Lanka, and Hanuman and all these powerful half-deity gods, Anaras, it's throwing the mountain peaks, and then his squirrel gets caught up in the enthusiasm and starts to put pebbles. You know, to be part of that. And then Hanuman at some point is disturbed with the squirrel because he's getting in the way. So he's chastising the squirrel, but then Ram said, no, no, he's doing fine.
Leave him alone. Yeah, it's like considered equal. In other words, you're doing your full.
Yeah.
The Vanaras can lift mountains, they should. He can only lift little bits of something. So. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, does that make sense? So the Vedic culture is the Lord is seeing that everybody's engaged. Because you can't really do anything about your past karma. You can only deal with, you can engage it now properly. That's what you can do. That's the only thing in your hand. So there's no use lamenting about it. You just engage it now. You deal in the present. So that's mode of goodness. Do your performed duties. That's mode of goodness. Right? Do it to please Krishna. That's pure goodness. So that's your best situation. By such engagement, human energy is spoiled because human energy is primarily meant for purifying the senses in order to engage them in satisfying the senses of the Supreme Lord. So that's the whole point. You're engaging the senses to be purified to engage them in the Lord's service. So in other words, I'm situating myself in goodness to engage myself in pure goodness. If I engage, if situate in goodness, very close to pure goodness, I just have to drop the karma and gyan. Right? Then I'm in pure goodness. But now, if I situate myself in passion and ignorance, how do I drop the passion and ignorance to be engaged in pure devotion? Does that make sense? That's not going to work very good. So if you pick the modern lifestyle of passion and ignorance, how do you drop the passion and ignorance from the modern lifestyle? Everything about it's based on that.
Drop the lifestyle.
Yeah, you'd have to drop the lifestyle, but then what's the alternative?
I'll say it's extremist.
Huh?
They'll say it's extremist then.
Western is extreme. It's not Western. Means or the Asians or the Africans or the, you know, Central or South Americans or the original North Americans, that any of them do we have that is the term there, imperialists or conquistadors, right? So who are the extremists? You know, the person is there satisfied. You know, they, how much gold did the Incas have? Way more than the totality of Europe together. So how is it extreme? It works. Right? The only reason Europe was flourished, they saying Europe flourished because of the gold, because they stole gold from every other civilization in the world. And it ran for some time. And now it seems to be their capital's running out. But you understand what I'm saying? So where is this? What do you mean it's extreme?
No, they'll say that it's extreme because they don't know about putting things in the right balance.
That's there, of course. But what I'm meaning is that the extreme, the Western, that's extreme. Because everything about it's extreme. You know what I'm saying?
Because they don't understand Dharma?
Yes, they don't understand Dharma, so they don't know who they are, what they're dealing with. So it's just basically, it's ignorance within ignorance, because it's about dravya, it's tamas. It's based on that. It's not based on self-realization. So as a podity, it's all right to start with it. That's fine. You start from wherever you are. That's the practical principle. But to say that it itself is viable, that's not intelligent. It's just not intelligent.
Except for the Brahmins, the other Varnas are mixed with the lower modes. So,
yes, but
for a Westerner to situate themselves in goodness, that's a trick. I mean, we've been conditioned by the lower modes.
No, that's there. But the point is Kshatriya is goodness and passion. Kshatriya means that it has to be practical. So the point is that when someone says, okay, the Vedic, it has to be practical, you know, not theoretical, that's fine. Because the point is the Kshatriya, there has to be rules, there has to be order, it has to be laws. It's just that unless you can show how the Vedic is practical, they're not going to accept it. But if you show how it's practical, then that's what everybody's going to do. You know what I'm saying? It's just like the king. He's a pagan. You convince him about Christianity, then what happens to the kingdom? He's a Christian and the rest of his kingdom is pagans? No. Kshatriyas don't work like that. That's the whole point, is you're dealing with the burned out Kshatriya genes in the Westerns. You know? And even it reflects in their genes, right? You know, you got, you know, washed in holes and stuff like that. You know? So the whole point is the external manifestation of the genes is in the genes. Right? So then you go back, that's where they have to do, but the goodness has been lost. So they will establish rules, but it's their own speculative rules. Because the point is if it's actually bourgeois, then it's just a matter, you know, does it make business or not? And it doesn't really matter the other thing. But no, it's got to be what I'm doing, the rest of the world has to do. That's the Kshatriya nature. You understand?
Yeah.
So therefore, that's the point, is that's engaged in Krishna's service, applying the Vedic principles to get the world to do, then it's glorious. But if one's going to try to get the rest of the world to live a Western lifestyle, then that's basically useless would be better.
Right. Could you talk a little bit about situating yourself in the mode of goodness?
Means you're doing things because it's your duty to do, that's mode of goodness. That's what mode of goodness is. See, the problem is this element here of tamas. Is those who profess the Western lifestyle only see dravya. They can't see beyond dravya. They can't see beyond things. It's the mentality in which it's done. But they're so attached to the dravya that they don't want to change the dravya. And so the focus is on the dravya, not on the improvement of the consciousness. Otherwise, they'd be talking about pure devotional service, and then whatever your situation, engage in pure devotional service. That's what they'd be talking about. No, they're talking about, no, we as Westerners, it's fine that we live as Westerners. So it's on the dravya, it's not on the principles of pure devotional service.
Other than coming under the direction of those that are in the mode of goodness, you know, it's very hard for somebody to even conceive of the mode of goodness.
Yeah, but the point is it's just like even you're talking that. How many people can conceive of success? Otherwise, why are there so many schools of thought to teach this? And it's probably billions of dollars is gained by those people who work in this success field. Because people can't conceive of success, which is the whole motto of the Western civilization. They can't conceive of husband and wife living together and not killing each other. They can't conceive of parents and children living together without killing each other. They can't conceive of teachers and students living together. They can't conceive of, you know, working with your neighbors or the people on the other side of the street, or, you know, the next block over is a different group of people. They can't conceive of these things. So the point, they're making it sound like it's a great, perfect, viable system, but not as good as Krishna consciousness. So all we have to do is just add to Krishna consciousness, already wonderful, perfect system. As a system, it has failed on all fronts. All fronts. Right? The only place where it's success is things that are what's recommended in the Vedas. But they can't see it due to ignorance. So it's not a viable system. You know what I'm saying? And where there is culture and where there is things that are working, it's actually coming from someplace farther east. Coming from Europe or Far East, right? You know, the American business corporation is based more now on the Japanese systems than they were. The American systems were failing. So it's not that great. So it's what works comes from the east.
Religion comes from the east.
Everything comes from the east. Per capita, any Asian Oriental, you know, Indian or, you know, Far East Oriental, per capita in the West has way more money than you're for the same amount of people that are Western or that are dedicated to the Western lifestyle. They changed the rules in schools to let Asians come into the school midterm. White man can't do that. They won't let him in. But an Asian can walk in midterm. Why? Because they're so much better. They're taking over everything. That's the whole point. White man is not that clever as he thinks he is. You know, to give a South American joke here. If you could bought white man for what he's actually worth and sold him what he thinks he's worth, the profit margin would be fabulous. Yeah, so you understand what's happening here? So that's the whole point, is why for a minority of people that aren't that successful, they're not, especially socially, and then we're going to have to listen to them to how to socially live. Okay, I don't mind if they're saying business-wise, but even business-wise, the Indians and Orientals do. But lifestyle, how is the Western lifestyle superior? How is it superior? How is toilet paper superior to water? You know what I'm saying? How are these things superior?
You know what I'm saying? Isn't it a purification?
Yes, but then you have to be open to it. If you're not open to purification, you won't get purified. You'll get less, but you won't get dynamically. That's what Krishna tells Nanda Maharaj. If you know what you're doing, you get more benefit than if you don't. So here, if you're committed to ignorance, how are you going to progress? Even if you became purified. You know what I'm saying? Let's say you have the group, they're living their Western lifestyle and they're comfortable with it. And then one person from following, you know, and then they're all practicing devotional. One person gets purified. He decides, well, hey, I want to wear a dhoti. What are the other guys going to say?
Weird.
That's weird. It's fanatic. It's not necessary. But it's a natural progression.
Let's ban the dhoti.
Huh?
Let's ban the dhoti.
Yeah, ban the dhoti. You know what I'm saying? So it's not progressive. It's regressive. It's not regenerate. It's degenerate. So it's the mode of ignorance. It's opposite of reality. So that's what Krishna says in Gita. Mode of ignorance makes you think, what's religion is irreligion, and what's irreligion is religion. Therefore, the religious thing to do is, you know, not follow the Vedic thing. And that by following the Vedic, then that's fanatic, it's this, it's that. They got a whole lot, list of nice terms to describe.
So let's talk about devotees becoming
spiritual. I am talking about devotees. I'm not talking, not one word I mentioned is about the karmas. I'm only talking devotees. Because karmis won't say this. Karmis will not think I'm weird for wearing a dhoti. They think it's different, it's unique.
Yeah, well,
but as a monk, you know, it's okay, cool. They wouldn't do it. You can apply what I'm talking about to the materialists. But what I'm talking about, because this is Bhagavatam, we're only talking devotees here. Yesterday's class was about devotees in the temple. That was not about the karmas. What I've been saying today, it's about the devotees, not about the karmas. Karmas is like, who cares? You know, they can talk all they like. What does that affect us? But if devotees talk like that, that affects us. Okay, verses 32 to 34. The Lord enters each universe and each body. Brahma speaks of Hiranyagarbha, the Purusha avatar who fathers him, also named Garbhodakshay Vishnu, Hiranyagarbha, and Narayana. This form of the Lord is the cause of the Jagannath Virat Roop manifestation. Meditation upon the Virat helps the Jiva understand that in any material situation he is ever related to the cause of all causes. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, right, so that's the whole point of this, is whatever situation you're in, you're related to the Lord through the Virat.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary to verses 32 to 33.
Why through Virat and not through Kiradakshay Vishnu?
Because it means Kiradakshay Vishnu is who manifests the Virat. In other words, the Dravya that you're dealing with, that's expanded from the Lord, so then you see its connection back to the Lord. That's what Virat does. How to expand what you see back to the Lord. I mean, how to connect what you see back to the Lord. Right? It means, in other words, you think of it as Kiradakshay Vishnu is doing. It's not that it's just Virat. So that's the difference. The impersonalists, they start off with just seeing Virat because they can't relate to that there's a person behind it. So they're starting to get that understanding. But we immediately connect with that. Just like Brahman, we immediately see it's just Krishna's effulgence. So,
maybe on a good day.
On a good day?
Yeah.
It didn't make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense, but it's like, just like when I'm walking around in my daily life, I'm not...
Yeah, well, that's
a pretty high platform.
You have a good day, so then you
cultivate that.
So you have another good day.
Yes. Okay. Slowly.
Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary to verse 32-33, because in the spiritual world, the devotee is going to walk around within the spiritual world, and what's he going to see?
Opportunities to serve Krishna.
Opportunities to serve Krishna. So the point is whatever you're in, you have to connect it to Krishna. So now we're just connecting to Krishna. Why are we only doing that much? Why is that like the limit of our... stretching the limits of our capacity, because we see every situation and connect it to ourselves. How can I enjoy this? So we're connecting it to how to, it's Krishna, and then the next step is how can Krishna enjoy this? You understand? So it's so that's why it goes to the neutral. I'm the enjoyer too. Just it's connected to Krishna too. It's for Krishna's pleasure. Right? Now if one can just switch just from it's for my pleasure to it's Krishna's pleasure, that's better. Then the middle step is not so necessary. But the middle step is useful if we're not making any endeavor in that direction. Right? Like that. So that's what it's for. Meditation upon... Okay. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary to verses 32-33, the Karana Srishti, cause, has been described. Now the Karya Srishti, effect, is described. When these ingredients were unmixed, and when it was not possible for them to make the bodies, then the Lord entered them. They became combined by his compacting energy and taking primary and secondary forms, created the body of the universe as a whole and the individual bodies. Right? So the primary is the universe as a whole, so he's entered that, and then the secondary is the bodies as individual. Interesting here, the compacting potency.
Yes.
Because the energy will just, you know, won't connect together. So now you can take all these different elements that you require to make a body and compact them together.
Mm-hmm. So that's gravity? Is that gravity?
Whatever it is. He is what's attracting. He's the attractive principle.
Yeah.
Right? So definitely gravity's got to come from him.
Yes.
He's the attractive one. Because gravity, it means attraction is sambandha, and your relationship with it is the gravity. It attracts you. So therefore, then it's part of, that's the element of Balaram, Sankarshan. Right? That when the emotional attraction, that'll be Krishna. That's Prajumna. You understand? So you have both.
Was it supposed to be the attraction itself to be Pradyumna, or just the feeling of attraction?
Means that you're sitting on the ground.
Oh, that's attraction.
Yeah. That aspect of attraction. That you're happy to be sitting on the ground. I mean, when you find yourself floating up on the ceiling, you kind of miss that Shankarshan element. You know? You're not quite getting the same Prajumna taste from sitting on the ceiling, right?
Haven't tried.
No, haven't tried. Yeah. Okay. You won't get the full effect unless you have really long hair and it hangs down when you sit on the ceiling. Your short hair does, you don't get the full effect.
Okay.
Okay. So they compact it. So then what does that mean? Even if we're going into physics, how do you have a big bang? Right? You compact something enough, then it flows. So that means it still has to be Krishna's potency to compact it, even if you're going to work on that principle.
Yes.
So it's they're missing the compacting potency.
Yes.
Right? The Adhara Shakti, the accommodating potency into space, that they have no idea. They haven't even thought of the compacting potency. They know time and space are there, but they can't define it. And the compacting, that one didn't even come up yet. For living bodies to form, the bhutendriya mano guna, the gross elements, the senses that perceive them, the mind and the modes of material nature, must first be manifest and then assembled. Right? So then you have the gross elements, the senses, the mind and the modes. All of them are separate, but they're not combined. Right? Their assembler is Bhagavat Shakti, right? The Lord's energy, the direct potency of the Lord. End quote. 32:33. The Bhagavat Shakti does this assembly in two modes of action, Sat and Asat. Footnote 26. 26. We meet the terms Sat and Asat, which means cause and effect, in our study of Canto 1, see 1:230. In the beginning of the material creation, that absolute personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, in his transcendental position, created the energies of cause, Sat, and effect, Asat, by his own internal energy. Because right? He does everything through the internal potency. The internal potency transforms, and the effect is seen, therefore, in the external. Right? But he doesn't deal directly with the external. He only deals with the internal. Right? So, in other words, Krishna, as the original cause, only deals with the internal potency as the formal cause. The formal cause transforms into the material cause. Does that make sense? Right? And then the jiva is instrumental there as the operational cause, or the seeming, efficient cause. But he can only be efficient if he follows the rules that were established in the primary creation between the Lord, the original cause, and his internal potency as the formal cause. Does that make sense?
I'm sure it does.
Here,
it made sense when we discussed it before.
But yeah.
You don't remember
that. I was just writing and then I lost it.
Oh.
Lost it.
We don't remember causation. No one remembers causation?
No.
Remember.
Yeah. Yiddish cup.
Okay, yes?
Here, the internal potency, which is doing the actual creation.
That means she transforms as the external.
Yeah.
Because he glances at Ramadevi, the internal potency, but the effect of that glance is then on the external. She transforms. She, in other words, she carries it into the external. And but because as the external, she still needs shelter and that support, therefore he transforms it into Sadashiva.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Then you have that overall principle in the material world. Then that enters into each universe. That's where you have the particular demigods, which are expanding from this expansion. Mm-hmm. You understand? So there's the overall aspect of Shiva, and the overall aspect of Durga, and the overall aspect of Brahma, mm-hmm. right? And then the overall aspect of Vishnu, right? And so Mahavishnu is even separate from this, because he's the combination of all that. Right, then each of those aspects enter each universe. Right, so as Vishnu enters as Garbhadaksha. Right, and then the Hiranyagarbha enters as means you have the subtle form of Hiranyagarbha. Then you have and then the gross form of the subtle as Vairaja, and then the gross form of the gross. I mean, or the subtle and gross form of the gross form as forehead Brahma. Mm-hmm. Right? In other words, you have the subtle creation and the gross creation within the universe. So the subtle is the Hiranyagarbha, or that the creative principle. Then that element of enjoying this, you know, what is the overall thing? The enjoying these things. That's the Vairaj. And then you have Brahma, who then manifests. Mm-hmm. Right. So like this, it all comes down. Yes.
So the internal potency transforms into the external potency.
Yes.
So the external potency is still Krishna.
Yes.
So what is the role of Mahamaya?
She is that transformation.
She is actually the transformation.
Yeah. And the internal is, that's Yogamaya. So Yogamaya transforms into Mahamaya. Does that make sense? But Krishna himself doesn't deal with that. He only deals with the internal parts. So that aspect of Lakshmi, there's an aspect of Lakshmi that does the transformation. Lakshmi always remains as Lakshmi. Right? So Sri Bhu Nila, Nila is the aspect that transforms. So you have Nila within the spiritual who directs the Leela. Right? And then you have Nila who then transforms into who directs the Leela here. You know, in other words, what stuff we do.
So it's through the agency of Super Soul that one connects, if one is inclined to connect things back to the Lord, even the
It means it's hearing about Krishna. That we hear. In other words, contact with Krishna through the devotees, that's what inspires us to connect everything back.
So even the external energy can be, in some, you could say, it could be a manifestation of Krishna if it's seen.
No, it is a manifestation of Krishna. Illusion, Maya, means we don't see it as a manifestation of Krishna. That's the thing. The materialist sees that it's not. See, that's what we were discussing previously, is that it's taken that, well, you could do it this way or you could do it that way. No, there is only the spiritual. If you want to be successful and satisfied as a soul, you have to look at it through the spiritual vision. Material vision is not successful. Yes, it's an alternative, but it's you know, it's just like you could function in normal society or you could be in prison. So is that what you call options? So do we look at it that, well, I mean, you know, there's the prison option and then there's this other alternative of the out of prison option. No, there is the reality is the out of prison option, and this other one is kind of like, yeah. You know. So that's the whole thing. We're looking at it like, well, you could do it like this, or you could do it like that, you know. There's the West, there's India. These are just options. No. There's what is practiced in the cosmos And then there's what they do in the West. Like that. It means the cosmos follows the Vedic culture. That includes the rest of the universe. Even the demons follow, because they're smart enough to know at least you get some material facility from it. Yes.
How is the Sarasiva's form looking like? Is it 200 or 400 or?
Certainly worried about the hands.
Oh, hands. Is it like Shiva? The color of the skin?
That means the point is all these aspects are him, so he'll have all these.
Like Shiva.
How many hands does Krishna have? But he's also Vishnu. Four. Sometimes he has 16, sometimes 12, depending on the pastime. Right? But the two-arm form with one head is the, you know, the pleasant one to deal with. So Sadashiva has that form. These other aspects are there because they're part of him. Otherwise, how do they manifest? Is that? Okay. The Bhagavad Shabda, we're continuing. By his own energy, continues in the next page. From the purport, the position of the Lord is always transcendental because the causal and effectual energies required for the creation of the material world were also created by him. Right? He is unaffected, therefore, by the qualities of the material modes. His existence, form, activities, and paraphernalia all existed before the material creation. So within Sat, everything is there. So the Asat is just an effect from that. Right? So you have the cause, which is Sat, or the eternal, and the effect, which is the external energy. Right? So because it's a transformation of the other, then therefore he only has to deal with Sat. And it will be, and the effect will be therein. Asa. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let us say, the person's running a company. They deal with their main managers. The managers deal with the supervisors, who deal with the guy on the floor, who deals with the customer. The guy who owns the company never deals with the customer. Mm-hmm. Never has to.
Unless they got a quote.
Yeah, well, that's another. You know, or unless it's a one-man operation, you know, like the Pondwalla, right? You know, so he's the head guy, he's the manufacturer, he's the distributor, he does the marketing, you know, he does the advertisement, you know, he does the whole thing. Yeah, but as the boss, he doesn't deal with the customer. That's the distributor.
You can have different hats.
Yeah. Okay. 27. Okay. The first mode of assembly. The first mode of assembly, cause, forms uncountable universes that for thousands of ages float upon the causal ocean, the water of the Mahatattva. In the purport of verse 33, Srila Prabhupada notes, the Lord then, by his plenary portion as Mahavishnu, lies down within the water of the Mahatattva, and the water is called the causal ocean, Karana Jal. At last, the Lord enters each universe as Garbhodakshay Vishnu, the second Purusha, and gives them life, means the universe life. Right? From the Padmakosha that sprouts from his navel, he gives birth to Brahma, right? Padma Kosha, the covering of the lotus, right? Because it has all these elements. These, what was that fancy word that meant layers? You know, flowers are always in that foliation, yeah. So whatever it is, that aspect. So it's got all those layers. He gives birth to Brahma. Thereafter, the secondary mode of assembly, effect, is continued by Brahma in the Visarga creation. So the primary creation means what's outside and what's inside. That's all, that's all cause. Right? And then Brahma, what he does, that's effect. Because then you see it in the other. Because otherwise, you're just dealing with the Lord and his energy. And so, where's the Maya? That's why that's called Vishuddha Sattva. So even the living entities in that state, even though they're destined to come into the world, they're still situated in Vishuddha Sattva because there is no senses. You can't perceive it. So you can't want to enjoy something unless you can tell it's there. Right? Yes.
Can we say then that primary and secondary up to Brahma is Sat? And then
No. There's Brahma. No secondary up to Brahma. Brahma is the secondary. You have the Sat aspect, that's the overall, what's outside, and then the specific within the universe.
So that's still primary?
That's still primary, yeah. Based, generally, we've always discussed it before, just what's inside the universe.
Yeah.
But we can see as from these discussions now, and then the Brahma Samhita, mm-hmm. then it makes a distinction between the two, but at the same time, they're the same thing. It means, in other words, what's outside is you've generated the universes and separated the elements and everything, but it's still just not animate. Then the Lord enters it as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu and then gives life to it. Right? So then from there, then the navel, from the Padma Kosha, from his navel comes. Brahma is there, and then Brahma then manifests that what we call the material phenomena, the cosmic manifestation. But it was all the elements and everything are there, the potency to pull things together, to accommodate, everything's already there. So that means you've dealt with the primary, and you're dealing with the Lord and his internal potency. Then that is transforming into the external. So you have both at once. Is that in the universe you have Garbhodakshaya with Lakshmi, which is still the Lord and his internal potency. But at the same time, as you also have the element of Shiva and Parvati, which are the external. That means the external energy and the Lord are the external energy. Mm-hmm. So it's still that potency that's making things work. Right? So, but their potency is still coming from Garbhodakshaya. Right, but it's Garbhodakshaya to Shiva, and then the Lakshmi into Durga. Does that make sense? So you have all that aspect. That's still primary creation. Then when Brahma he manifests, so you can actually it's there, and you can see it, and touch it, and smell it. Right? Then that's the secondary. Because that's then when the living entity have their senses, so now they can say, I am the enjoyer of this or that. But before that, they're actually on the Vishuddha Sattva platform. Right? So the creation is that the primary creation is in Vishuddha Sattva, it's in pure goodness. But when Brahma is there, then the effect of the modes of nature then have the gross effect, and then the living entity under the control of those modes. And those varieties of false ego, then desires to control and enjoy and doesn't see it connected to the Lord. So that's what these discussions are, is how to see from the external into the connection with the Lord through the creation. Right? In other words, I see the external, the secondary creation. I connect it to the Lord by seeing the primary creation. And then I keep going back to Krishna. And that's the form that's used. Does that make sense? So that's the reason that we discuss this. It's because then we can see how, from the secondary creation, which we're involved in and trying to enjoy, how to take it back to the primary, because there is no enjoyment there. That's in pure goodness. Right? And then back to a relationship with the Lord, rather than just he's God. Because otherwise you're dealing with Krishna on these levels of primary creation, you're dealing with him technically as Paramatma. So he's God. But the point is Bhagavan is where you have the relationship. Because here we're talking about how he enters and that. We're not talking about how Mahavishnu has his palace and his devotees and he's having pastimes. That's Bhagavan. We're just talking about how he's breathing out and in and creating the universe. So that's Paramatma of the Mahatattva. Garbhodakshaya is the Paramatma of the universe.
You say that's the main difference between the two?
Paramatma and Bhagavan?
No, between Garbhodakshaya and Mahavishnu.
Yeah, one's the overall Mahatattva, and Garbhodaksha is for the Mahatattva within the specific universe. And then Kirodaksha is then with each living entity. You know, so you're dealing with just very small, only as much Mahatattva as you need to put together one body.
So we can see this process from gross to subtle, or we can see from subtle to gross?
Yes, either way. It means we study it from subtle down to gross, but when we'll apply it into our life, it'll be from gross to subtle. That's why, you know, G is mentioning, you know, we sit here and it makes sense, but when we walk out of here and try to apply it, it doesn't necessarily make sense, because we're having to use it from the other way. And so we're so conditioned that from the gross, we look at it this way. But you have to do... So if need be, we start from this, and we go back, and then bring it down, then we see a connection, and then we take it back again. So the point is that's what Bhaktivinoda Kaur's point is. By hook or by crook, you get it done. You know, remembering Krishna, that's what you want to do. So it doesn't matter if you have to stand on your head or whatever. As long as it makes you, reminds you of Krishna, then great. That's the whole point. Right? But still, it should be great, meaning it's sustainable. It's something that you can regularly. So in the beginning, regular may be quite distance between moments. But then with time, then that practice, the moments will get closer and closer. Yes.
Being Vishuddha Sattva, is the primary creation also eternal like the Lord?
The principle of it, but its manifestation is because the point is what is it? It's just the Lord. All it is various aspects of himself are you know, able to be appreciated. And then if they're not, but the point is they're still eternal. But the material, the Brahma's creation, the atoms are eternal. You know, but the particular combinations of them are not.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So they just disappear. But these elements of Pradhan is always there in the Lord. In other words, Pradhan is an aspect of his internal potency. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. Hence, Srila Prabhupada states, 33rd purport, that both modes of creation are done by the Supreme Lord. Okay, yeah, here. So, continued by Brahma, the effect is, fills out the gross details within each individual universe. So it's like you colored it in or connected the dots, but it's already there. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah. Does that make sense? It's just like you have the coloring book, and the horse exists there before the kid takes their, you know, coloring thing and goes like this, you know, like that. And afterwards, it's still, the horse is still there, just now it's a bit more gross than it was before. You understand? That's how it works. So Brahma is making the gross manifest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? No? Okay. So both modes of creation are done by the Lord, means the cause and the effect. There are two modes of material creation, the creation of the collective universes, as stated above, done by Mahavishnu, and the creation of the single universe. Right? So does that make sense? So that's the primary creation in these two modes, the collective and the individual. Okay? All right, so that it's already nice to work with the acharyas, they have all these nice terms. It's just a matter of remembering that. Right? Okay. Both are done by the Lord, and thus the universal shape, as we can see, takes place. Right. So that means, based on these two modes of the overall, the collective and the individual, then thus the universal shape, as we see it, takes place. In other words, Brahma's creation. Footnote 27. The explanation of sada sat, or cause and effect, is of great significance, since this chapter is entitled "The Cause of All Causes." Right? So, because we'll see causes in this world, but there's the cause behind that. Right? During a morning walk in Bombay on 30th March 1974, Prabhupada remarked, cause and effect. Mahatattva is cause. And this cosmic manifestation is the effect. So, beyond that, therefore Krishna said, Mahat Padam. The Mahat Tattva is lying at his lotus feet. Samshrita ye para palavam plavam Mahat Padam. Mahat Tattva is lying on the lotus feet of Krishna. Right, so beyond that, either beyond that just means he's beyond that, the same twice, or beyond that means beyond that is Mahavishnu, beyond that is Krishna. You know. In any case, it's beyond is Krishna. So the Mahatattva, so therefore there's the collective aspect of Mahatattva connected with Mahavishnu, and the individual aspect of Mahatattva connected with Garbhodaksha Vishnu. Right, so that means just as Mahavishnu has the Hiranyagarbha and the Shiva aspect, Garbhodaksha Vishnu will have the same. So that's that Hiranyagarbha. Then there's the lotus, which is the aspect of Vairaja, which is the gross manifestation of the subtle, the primary creation. Right? Then you have Brahma, who then makes it manifest. So you can see, he gives the universe the shape as we see it. So at least the way we think we see it.
All right.
Yes.
So primary is the cause, secondary is an effect.
So, say again.
Primary is the cause. Secondary
is the effect. Yes, effect, yes. So that primary has the two aspects, the collective and the individual. Collective Mahavishnu, individual Garbhodaksha. Okay? So you have that. Do we get catch the same thing? Because we're wondering, what's the Hiranyagarbha outside, the Hiranyagarbha inside. It's just as Mahavishnu expands, naturally these aspects expand with him. So as Mahavishnu has these three aspects, so Garbhodaksha Vishnu will have these three aspects. Right? Then you have the specifics now of creating this universe, so you have Vairaja. Or that's the Virat, right? That's your connection. Because Brahma, he uses that as the gross aspect of the subtle to create the gross. Aspect of the gross, right? Does that make sense? And then that's the grosser aspect connected to the Lord of the subtle. So that's where we can see back to. We can go from this, understand his position behind this, and then get back to the Lord. That's the point of studying Virat. Because Brahma is born from Virat. He's born from the lotus.
Yeah.
Right? So he's born from the universal form. Because the universal form is the masculine principle, of cause and the feminine of effect, though in its subtler form. So therefore, then he is born from that, from Vairaj. Right? So that's why sometimes if there's no one qualified to be the four-headed Brahma, then Vairaja does himself. Right? Yes? No?
Yes.
Within each universe, the Lord assumes the Virat Roop. Great philosophers imagine that the complete planetary systems in the universe are displays of the different upper and lower limbs of the universal body of the Lord. 34 to 36, Srila Prabhupada remarks. The word kalpayanti, or imagine, is significant. The Virat universal form of the Absolute is an imagination of the speculative philosophers who are unable to adjust to the eternal two-handed form of Lord Sri Krishna. So, in other words, they take that as the form of the Lord.
Yes.
But that's not the form of the Lord. That's basically an extension of his energies.
Yes.
Although the universal form, as imagined by the great philosophers, is one of the features of the Lord, so it is a feature, it is more or less imaginary. That you're featuring it, that this is his feet, this is that. The potency may come from there, but it's not his feet.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The Himalayas are not Lord Vishnu's backbone. It is said that the seven upper planetary systems are situated above the waist of the universal form, whereas the lower planetary systems are situated below his waist. The idea impressed herein is that the Supreme Lord is conscious of every part of his body. And nowhere in the creation is anything beyond his control. So that's what you should gain, yes.
So the mistake we make is that we think the Himalayas are real and the real form of Krishna is symbolic or, you know,
yes, that's the impersonal. Yeah. So they're getting used to that because they can't deal with form. Because for them it's all been illusion, so you have to slowly introduce them.
So they think the illusion is not in here, but is. Okay.
Yeah, they think there is nothing there. Mm. So that's why we say they're Buddhists.
Yeah.
They're not actually. The Mayavad philosophy is not actually a Vedic philosophy.
Mm.
It's a Buddhist philosophy because the actual Vedic impersonalist is there. It's just Brahman.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't think beyond Brahman. So when you say nothing is there, that's actually Buddhism.
So Brahmavad is...
Brahmavad's different from Mayavad.
Yeah,
but they're all impersonalists.
Yeah,
you know, so you could say the Brahmavadi, the Mayavadi, and the Buddhist are all impersonalists.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they're like that. But technically, the Brahmavadi is not an atheist.
No.
It's just he's not well informed.
Yes.
But the Mayavadi and the Buddhists are atheists.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So they're adverse.
Yes, so they're adverse. Mm-hmm. Okay. The four varnas appears of Yatrup's mouth, arms, thighs, and lower legs. 37. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport. All living beings are stated to be parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, and how they are so is explained in this verse. The four divisions of human society, namely the intelligent class, the Brahmanas, the administrative class, the Kshatriyas, the mercantile class, the Vaishyas, and the labor class, the Shudras, are all in different parts of the body of the Lord. As such, no one is different from the Lord. That's the point. If you're not seeing connection to the Lord, then you make these distinctions. And there is a hierarchy, and so therefore this one's better than that. If you're seeing a connection to the Lord, there's still a hierarchy as far as how they work together. But as far as superiority, then there is no difference because it's all the Lord.
Yes.
So that's why the artist is not any less or better than the Brahmana as far as means devotional service goes. It means as a medium to express your devotion to the Lord. There's no difference. That's how equality is there. But it has to be a connection to the Lord. There's no connection to the Lord, there's no real equality.
Yeah.
The connection to the Lord doesn't mean that one is not performing one's duties. It doesn't mean that, oh, well, if they're all the same, therefore the Shudra could do any duty he likes, the Brahmin any duty.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because just like this, if the Shudra says, I'm going to do the duties of the Brahmin, which ones is he going to take?
Which one?
Yeah, what aspects? Because...
Eating, instructing
others, being authority.
Yeah.
Is he going to take the sadhana, getting up early, living simply, you know, being clean? No.
He just turns out Krishna.
Yeah. The Brahmin takes the Shudra aspects. What's he going to take?
Clean.
Simple.
No, he's already clean.
No, I mean cleaning, like the job.
Oh, okay. But maybe, what's the attractive feature? Why would the Brahmin want to get out and clean? So what's he going to take? Sense gratification. Less sense control. The Shudras, if they're not very sense controlled, no one minds.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because that, you know, that's just a common person. So then the Brahmin will take that. Is he gonna get out there and get down his hands and knees and scrub? Most likely not. So he wants to maintain the authority of the Brahminical class but have the sense gratification. The other one wants the sense gratification but the authority.
Uh-huh.
You know, saying we haven't even put in, you know, control and money.
Yeah.
You know,
so this isn't when a Brahmana is forced by circumstances.
No. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about when we talk equality.
Oh.
Then this is—it's not actually equal because we pick and choose. Equal means if you get the package, but we only pick and choose what we like. So there is no such thing as equality.
Mm-hmm.
It's all—it's a will of the wisp. It's used to get the bile moving and to get political positions and economic positions to work. But it's there's no reality because you can't do it. Right?
Yes.
So Maharaj, when we say that Vanasham is not connected, actually it's the same illusion everybody is in that it's not connected to Krishna.
No, but it's the thing that easily connects. You see it connect. It is connected because it comes. Everything's connected because it comes from the Lord. But you just have to know where it is. Like irreligion, where is it? It's on the back of the Varna. So the Varnasha, we're talking about the front. So if it's not Vedic, we're talking about the back.
So the same illusion that you take the form, but you don't attribute it to the Lord. Then
yes, then it takes on that element. So that's the whole thing. Is it deals nicely. You know, otherwise, you know, you don't want the back on the front.
So the main discussion about the nothing should be pure devotional service.
Yes, that's the whole point. But the difficulty is that because culture is not something that we're used to dealing with, this element of that stage of material, spiritual, and transcendental, we're not used to. Because we're only used to duality, so it's got to be material or spiritual. We don't understand in between. We don't understand spiritual in between transcendental pastime and material pastime. Then there's the spiritual situation. So, therefore, then we don't see the actual effect. We don't see the benefit of the goodness as a stepping stone between the mundane and the spiritual. Does that make sense? Which is odd. I mean, well, it's not odd. I mean, it is odd, but it's not odd because the problem where we have the problem is with who we are. We are the marginal. We're the in between. But we're thinking, no, I'm God, or I'm material energy. So, as we understand ourselves as in between, then we can understand these processes that are in between. Understand? Yeah. So, the mouth of the body and the legs of the body are non-different constitutionally, but the mouth or the head of the body is qualitatively more important than the leg, right? Constitutionally, they're all part of the body of the Lord, but as far as, how do you say it? Qualitatively, then there's vishesha, there's a difference. Like that. At the same time, the mouth, the legs, the arms, and thighs are all component parts of the body. These limbs of the body of the Lord are meant to serve the complete whole. The mouth is meant for speaking and eating. The arms are meant for protection of the body. The legs are meant for carrying the body. And the waist of the body is meant for maintaining the body. Because the waist means in the middle, then that's how the body is maintained. Right? But it's carried around by the legs, it's protected by the arms, and the head does the talking and eating.
Thinking, hopefully.
Well, talk means it should be.
Oh, should, yeah.
Yeah, because talking means it's in this case, means you're using words, meaning intelligence, like that, is represented there. Yeah. Okay, so I think we'll stop here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Sarvabhita Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai
Jainatai Gaura.
These terms about causes I was doubting about. I never got a hold of these things. Material cause, formal cause, efficient cause. That was the one I was...
Material cause means the effect. Efficient cause means the cause.
The actual cause.
So cause and effect.
Yeah.
And then you have, within that whole process, that cause has two aspects. Right? The original and formal. An effect has two aspects, the instrumental and the material.
Okay.
You understand?
Yeah.
So that's how it
is. Yeah.
So this is reflected.
Yeah. Okay.
So this is the master, this is the feminine.
Yeah.
So that's what we're trying to do here. So actually it'll be like this, you know?
Yeah.
Means this will transform into this, and then we think we're this.
Yes.
You know, so so that's what happens. It's a very simple thing. It's more developed than, let's say, I think Aristotle.
Yeah.
He deals with
similar,
four,
but he doesn't.
He doesn't actually understand the transcendental.
Yeah.
That's all.
So simple.
That's the amazing thing. It's all in that sense.
Yeah. Just we make it.
Yeah. Things get in the way.
Yes.